And according to the clock on the wall, it is time to get started. Good morning or afternoon, everyone. Welcome once again to EMForum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your moderator today. And we are very glad you could join us. For our newcomers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. Today, we will be discussing the National Incident Management System, known affectionately as NIMS, and how it has been implemented across the country. So we hope you will take this opportunity to express your thoughts and experience. Our guest today has conducted 5 separate scientific research studies on this topic and will share her findings with us. Please note that you can find links to a number of the articles that will be mentioned from today's background page. And I wanted to point out in particular that the Journal of Homeland Security and Emergency Management articles that are referenced can be actually downloaded using a guest login on their site for free, I should mention. Now, for the benefit of our first-timers, we will begin with an overview presentation and then proceed to your questions and comments. Now, let me point out that if you would like to capture a PDF of today's presentation slides, you may do so by clicking on the printer icon at the bottom right of your screen once we've got them displayed. Now, if you have any difficulty with live meeting, you may use the feedback drop-down menu up at the top right to change your color. And then my associates, Ava Jean Moore and Lori Weaver, will monitor that and try to assist you. And once you have been helped, please do change your color back to green. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we do get to that part of the program. And we also ask you not to send any private messages to the speaker or moderator. As you can imagine, we will be a bit busy. We are making a live meeting recording, which should be available later this afternoon, and we're also making audio-only MP3 versions of our programs for your convenience, which you can access directly from our website or by subscribing to a podcast available from the iTunes Store. A text transcript will be posted early next week, and if you're not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when the materials are ready. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Dr. Jessica Jensen is an assistant professor in the Department of Emergency Management at North Dakota State University. She is also the Associate Director of the Center for Disaster Studies and Emergency Management at NDSU. And as mentioned, her research has primarily focused on perceptions about and implementation of NIMS and the Incident Command System. Now, if you were with us last time when we talked about IAM's proposed framework for measuring return on preparedness investments, you may recall that Jessica also worked with IAM to prepare that document. But she could not join us last time, so we are especially glad that she could be with us today. And we have asked her to share any additional thoughts she may have on the IAM document. Now, please note that IAM did extend the deadline for comments until tomorrow, September 15th, so you still do have time to participate on that, and there are some links still from the bottom of our homepage. Welcome, Jessica. Thank you very much for joining us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be with you all and to share with you some of the findings from the research I've been conducting over the past several years on NIMS. Before I get started, I did want to take the opportunity to mention once again the preparedness project that IAM has been involved with and that Randy Duncan, a colleague of mine, was on EM Forum speaking about recently, and to urge you all to take a look at that document. You can find it on IAM's website, and take the opportunity to also provide your comments and thoughts on whether or not you think that this would be a reasonable approach to measuring return on investment for the Emergency Management Performance Grant Program. IAM, and I know I am also personally quite interested to get any feedback we can I was saddened not to be able to participate in the EM Forum presentation last time. I was in Washington, D.C. with IAM taking meetings on the Hill with the Department of Homeland Security and with FEMA about the document. And just to share with you all, the initial feedback we've received has been very positive. And more information about the feedback that's been received both through the SurveyMonkey.com review site and through our meetings throughout the nation will be shared with IAM members through its website very soon. Without further ado, I'm going to begin with a little bit of background about North Dakota State University and its involvement with emergency management. North Dakota State University began offering a minor in emergency management in 2001 and then began in 2003 a bachelor's, master's of science, and doctoral degree program in emergency management. It is a face-to-face program, so our students are forced, such as to come to North Dakota, to Fargo specifically, from around the country if they would like to participate in our program as opposed to being online. We've graduated our first round of bachelor's students in 2004, the first master's of science students in 2006, and the very first PhD holders graduated in 2009. Our Center for Disaster Studies and Emergency Management began in 2008, and the focus of the center is to conduct multidisciplinary research on topics related to disasters and emergency management, as well as to explore linking practitioner efforts and work in the field with academic work that's being done. And that's actually how I came to be involved in the work with IAM, is through the center. Now, I'm here today with you all to talk about the National Incident Management System, and I'm making a fairly dangerous assumption. I realize that most folks on this webinar have some level of familiarity. But just to provide a little overview, after September 11th and a number of investigations were carried out into the response efforts that took place in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, at the World Trade Center in New York, and at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., there was great concern that we find a way as a nation to improve the way we respond to disasters. There was also an interest expressed through these various commissions and their finding that we find a way to standardize our efforts so that we could anticipate predictably the way that each responding organization would carry out their efforts on scene and off scene, so that the way we improve as a country would generally improve. Now, when NIMS was mandated, it was mandated first through a Homeland Security Presidential Directive No. 5, and then it was cemented in law through the Homeland Security Act of 2002. Implementation with NIMS was voluntary in 2005, and counties and states throughout the United States had the option of beginning to comply with the NIMS mandate or not. However, as of 2006, all jurisdictions were required to implement NIMS in exchange for preparedness funding. So there was quite a bit of a carrot and stick sort of incentive and sanction for participating or not within NIMS and its framework. When NIMS was rolled out and mandated for use, it was done with a number of assumptions in mind. First, the federal government assumed that NIMS would work as it was designed. Second, it was assumed that everyone would buy into the system and be committed to implementing it. Third, it was assumed that everyone would use the system and not just use it, but use it in a standardized way. And when we're saying everyone here, we mean members of the private sector that participate in response, local level governments, and all of the entities within them related to response, including first responders and others, and nonprofit organizations that are relevant to response. So quite a large group is included with this assumption that everyone would buy in and that everyone would use the system. And finally, it was also assumed that the system was equally applicable to all places and all situations. Now, that's okay. All of these assumptions were okay as long as they're true and as long as empirical research can demonstrate that they're working with these assumptions. So given the ambitious nature of this policy and what it tried to do, you would kind of expect that there's a lot of research that exists on the topic, but in fact, there's been very little. The pre-existing research is limited to a handful of studies, one of which some folks may have been familiar with already, and if not, maybe after the call, if you're interested, you could take a look at it, was published in Learning from Catastrophe, Quick Response Research in the Wake of Hurricane Katrina. This is a book that was published in 2006 based on research that was conducted immediately following Hurricane Katrina. Dr. David Neal and Dr. Gary Webb conducted research in the Louisiana area with local, state, and federal responding partners on the use and usefulness of the National Incident Management System and any structural barriers that existed to its full implementation. Then in 2009, I published a study within the International Journal of Mass Emergencies and Disaster based on research I had conducted in 2007. Basically, what I did is travel throughout three states interviewing county emergency managers about their perceptions of NIMS use and how it was being used, and in so doing, discovered a variety of challenges reported by emergency managers in fully implementing the system. In 2008, in April, I traveled to a state which I cannot name due to IRB or Institutional Review Board protocols. I traveled to the scene of a tornado, and as the response unfolded, I was on ground within 24 hours. I was able to watch how NIMS was used and interview various responding organizations, representatives in the Emergency Operations Center and Incident Command Center, on how NIMS was used and, again, how useful they believed the system was. That study was published in August of 2008. And finally, based on a mail survey that I conducted in April of 2008 with a colleague, Dr. D.K. Yoon at North Dakota State University, we asked volunteer fire department chiefs and volunteer firefighters to participate in a survey that asked them about how they viewed the Incident Command System and NIMS. The findings of this study are reported in the Journal of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and were published earlier this year in the spring. So basically, rather than walk you through the details of each of these studies, I'll just kind of summarize their key findings and how they informed the research we're here to talk about today. All of the studies that I've just mentioned really focus on the role of the local level in implementing the system and the degree to which local level participation and implementation influenced the ability of the overall response to function effectively and efficiently. There was also a focus across these studies on behavior, looking at whether or not the way that counties were approaching implementation was conducive to the National Incident Management System fulfilling its intent or its goals or not. Really looking at whether or not counties were modifying the system, implementing it as designed, totally ignoring it, doing it just minimally, et cetera. So all of these studies really looked at behavior. And all of them, all of the studies I've just listed, while few in number, did find substantial variation in the way that the National Incident Management System was being implemented, not just in terms of variation between one county and another, but also within counties by various organizations that are supposed to be implementing the system. For example, a public health department, a fire department, and a law enforcement agency each would be implementing the system potentially differently. At least that's what the data would suggest exists to some degree across the country. Now, within this variation, we found more variation. Basically, not only were people, counties and individual organizations, implementing the system differently from how the system was designed, but there were also substantial differences in whether or not they even wanted to implement the system. So there was differences in what I call behavioral intent, do people want to do it, and there were differences in the degree to which they're actually implementing it. So based on the few studies that have been conducted already, there was reason to suggest that the assumptions upon which NIMS is based may not hold true. But the research that's been done has its limitations. for one thing, as I've mentioned now, there's already very few studies in existence. That is a limitation. Another is that these studies had relatively small samples, so they didn't talk to everybody in the United States that's involved in responding. They were only talking to smaller units. Next, there wasn't really a causal model developed. The research that had been done wasn't looking at if we do this, then it works, if we do that, then it doesn't work. And so that's kind of a limitation of the system, because it's all well and good to identify that there's variation, but in order to go to that next step to either, to limit the variation or get rid of it entirely, we've got to know what it is that's making it so different. And the research was being conducted in such a way that we really couldn't draw those conclusions. And then finally, the studies that had been done previous to the one I'm going to talk about today lacked the ability to be generalized. Basically, because of the way that they had gathered the data, they weren't able to speak for the United States. And so this study, the present study I'm going to spend more time talking about today, the current NIMS implementation behavior of United States County, try to put to test the findings of the pre-existing research and overcome at least partially the limitations of that pre-existing research but by employing a sampling technique known as random sampling through a national random sample of county emergency managers. So it's able to speak to all counties in the United States, and by employing a quantitative survey tool that allows us to distinguish and explain why we found what we found in the data. So it wasn't just the NIMS research either that suggests that behavior is really a critical thing to be looking at. Decades of policy literature and public administration research had also suggested that behavior and what local level entities do, how they act, actually has a strong influence on whether or not policies perform as they're intended, what the outcomes are of that policy, and whether or not it achieves its goals. So based on the prior work on NIMS and based on the other literature that existed out there, I engaged in this study. So a mail survey was an internet survey were employed with this national random sample of county emergency managers, and as part of that survey, I focused on asking how counties were behaving, how they wanted to behave, rather, with respect to NIMS. County emergency managers were asked to evaluate their counties overall, similar to what they're asked to do with NIMS-CAST regularly. They were asked to rate on a scale the degree to which their county wants to implement NIMS. And points were specified on that scale that included not at all, minimally, modest modification as designed, and then county emergency managers could pick points in between those. And so I looked at several aspects of NIMS. First, NIMS is supposed to be used on a daily basis as it's designed. I asked county emergency managers to identify whether or not their counties want to implement NIMS on a daily basis. I asked them whether they want to implement it in small-scale events, whether they want to implement the various components of the preparedness component of NIMS, whether or not they want to implement the structures and processes associated with resource management and NIMS, and the same for communication and information management and command and management. In addition to that, I also collapsed all of the data gathered along these various lines of intent into an index or a summary score to look at overall what is their general behavioral intent. So I looked at the various little parts of NIMS, and then I looked at kind of an overall impression. And what I found is pretty simple. I found substantial variation in behavioral intent confirming the findings of the previous literature. Basically, what I found is a standard normal curve. The vast majority of counties within the United States are modifying NIMS. They want to modify the system. Now, why do they want to modify the system? Well, there's really two partial explanations that might exist. The first is they may feel the system isn't perfectly suited to the emergency management needs of their county and that it requires some tweaking to be more suitable. On the other hand, it could be that they couldn't implement NIMS as designed for some reason, even though they felt that the system was perfectly suited to their needs. But regardless of why there's this variation, a key finding here is that not everyone was buying into NIMS as it's designed. And you would think that if their intents fit with what they're actually doing, then they're not using the system in a standardized fashion. Given that the National Incident Management System was required for use since 2006 and that this survey was conducted in 2010, as a researcher, I would have expected that at the very least counties would intend to implement the system as designed, even if it's just to be compliant because the counties want the preparedness funding. But this survey research would indicate that counties actually intend to implement NIMS at very different points along a continuum of behavior. There's some that want to implement NIMS in a way that is conducive to the policy fulfilling its goals. So they're trying to do it as it's designed. And then there are counties that don't even want to do it as designed. They want to modify it. And if you took a look at that standard normal curve, that also means there's counties out there that are not implementing the system at all and or minimally. So we can conclude, before we even look at whether or not they're actually implementing the system and their actual behavior, that they're are a significant number of counties in the United States that are don't even intend to do it the way the system is designed to be implemented, and that because there are counties that intend to modify the system, the way they're conducting emergency management potentially varies from county to county. Now, it is possible that this can undermine the success of NIMS as an organizing system. Turning to actual behavior, it was measured in a similar way. Here I asked counties to identify again on a scale the degree to which their counties are actually implementing NIMS. They were given options again of not at all, minimally, modestly modifying the system, and as designed, and points in between. They were asked again whether or not they were actually implementing the system on a daily basis in small-scale events or incidents. The various components within preparedness, within NIMS, resource management, communication information management, command and management, and once again, I wanted to get an overall impression of what counties are actually doing, so I summed up that data and made an index score. And again, rather than bog you down with numbers, I'll show you a simple picture which really leaves that impression. I found, again, substantial variation in the actual implementation behavior of counties. Again, with most counties actually modifying the system within implementation. I found this, and I'll go back for 1 second. I found the same pattern of variation in terms of the degree to which they're implementing the system on a daily basis, within small-scale events, within preparedness, resource management, communication and information management, and command and management, and overall. So in every single line item, there was a pattern of variation that is very similar to a standard normal curve, with the vast majority modifying the system in each component. Now, these findings are problematic for a system that's intended to bring about standardization and foster predictability and coordination. The findings really kind of led me to more questions that I could not answer with just this one research study. But what kind of problems would be triggered because the system is being modified for the system's use and usefulness in a really large-scale event? If we were to see a Hurricane Katrina again, and we have multiple states responding at the same time with multiple counties and the federal government, and we're seeing so many entities responding, and we know that there's substantial variation in the way they've implemented NIMS, I wonder whether or not we're going to see the improved response that we're looking for as a result of implementing NIMS. I also was led to question, how are counties modifying the system? Given that they're reporting that they're modifying the system, are they modifying the system in the same way? Is one county's modifications compatible with another's modifications? Are they modifying the system in a way that still allows agencies and organizations and jurisdictions and levels of government to merge effortlessly into a common structure to contend with hazard events? And that's what we're counting on this system to do. And when we look at the national data across the country, we're seeing a significant pattern of variation that, you know, makes me wonder what we would see in a large-scale event like Hurricane Katrina. Now, given that we've seen this pattern of variation across the country, I also wanted to look at what might explain these factors. Now, the article that I was asked to discuss, the Current Implementation Behaviors article, didn't really get at that issue, but the study I conducted did. And so I, in addition to asking counties about how they wanted to implement the system and the degree to which they actually were, they were asked a series of other questions and to evaluate the extent to which their county agreed or disagreed with a wide variety of other statements. And an article will soon be coming out entitled Explaining the Current Implementation Behaviors of United States Counties, and I wanted to just preview those findings for you. Basically, I looked at a series of emergency management specific variables and looked at whether or not statistically these how counties felt about these variables predicts their behavior. So if they were in a rural area, did that mean they were less likely to implement the system? If a county had responded to one presidentially declared disaster within the last 10 years, did that predict it? Or if they had done 0 or 10, I mean, was that a relevant factor? Was it relevant, the amount of emergency management preparedness funding they had received from the federal government? Was it relevant how much experience the emergency manager had, or whether or not they were full-time or part-time? A lot of these variables had been suggested in the earlier work on NIMS as important. And what was remarkable and incredibly surprising to me was that all of those emergency management-specific variables did not bear out. In other words, ruralness, the amount of money you have, part-time or full-time, quarter-time status of emergency managers, none of those variables predicted how counties were wanting to implement or actually implementing the system. What did explain their intent and actual behavior was a set of variables that was introduced from the public administration world and the policy literature and have been shown to explain how other policies are implemented and how local-level implementers behave. Basically, what ended up explaining that behavior that I've just been talking about was whether or not there were clear goals for the policy, whether or not there was adequate technical support, realistic timelines for implementation, whether or not there were incentives and sanctions, whether or not adequate financial support had been provided for the implementation of the system, and other like variables. So basically, those policy characteristics that are controlled to a large extent at the federal level, those policy characteristics and whether or not counties thought that they were there, that predicts their, whether they want to do it and whether they're actually doing it. The second strongest variable that explains how counties are behaving is implementer views. And this basically is whether or not counties bought into the system. If counties bought in and they had a good attitude and were motivated to implement the system, that explained how they would behave. And the third variable, which was actually in terms of this construct that was developed in the survey, a very tiny part of it and came as quite a surprise, the third variable that predicted both intent and actual behavior was whether or not counties thought that they had enough personnel to implement the system, as in they had enough bodies, people, to implement the system. And that was just a teensy tiny little variable, but it ended up playing quite a large role in terms of explaining how counties are implementing the system. So basically, what I found in the data is that intent, how counties want to behave and how they actually behave, is explained by factors that are not specific to emergency management and things that actually can be concentrated on and adjusted to some extent. In other words, the federal government can do things about the characteristics of this policy, whether it's providing more realistic timelines, providing adequate technical support through, having introduced maybe from the beginning resource management guidelines that, even introducing guidelines from the beginning about how to implement that component of NIMS, they could certainly be more active in doing those things now in providing support, and we could expect, based on the data, to see an increase in the way that, in standardization in the way that counties want to and actually are implementing the system. We could also see the federal government and local emergency managers themselves engaging in more activities designed to bring about buy-in and commitment from the various parts of their counties or states or within the nation that are supposed to be implementing the system. We can do more here if we want to see standardization increase. We can also correct this issue of local capacity and this perception that there isn't enough personnel to implement the system. This could very simply be a training issue, a lack of understanding about how NIMS can be implemented and utilized. It is designed to be used in part or whole, depending on the requirements of the incident that's being responded to, so that could be resolved quickly, assuming that's the issue. But here's the kicker, and this is something that I found really fascinating in terms of NIMS ultimately being able to fulfill its goal in this country, and that is the variables I've just suggested we can do something about. There is work to be done there. We can do something, and we can expect to see standardization improve. But when it really comes down to it, when it really boils down to counties actually implementing the system, there's one variable that matters, and it has nothing to do with whether or not they want to do it. When it comes down to it, interorganizational characteristics are the fourth variable that predict whether or not they actually are implementing the system and how, that behavior. What was I looking at with interorganizational characteristics? I was looking at whether or not county organizations get along. Do they like each other? Do they have solid working relationships? Do they share goals? Do they share resources? Do they commonly acknowledge that a system like NIMS is needed? Those interorganizational characteristics are very much a local issue. There is very little shy of providing funding, increased levels of funding for exercises, for instance. There's very little, though, that the federal government can do to control this variable. There's also very little that the state can do or that a local emergency manager by themselves can do to control this variable. This is a community-wide, or in this case, a county-wide issue that really strongly suggests is related to whether or not counties are implementing the system and how. So I wanted to just kind of give you a look ahead to the next part of this study, that the findings of which will be released shortly. And then one more. I wasn't done with this topic, and I don't think I ever will be. There's so much to explore. But I took a small sample of the national random sample that had participated in this study that I've been talking about up to this point. And I sent the same survey to a public health official, an elected official, a fire chief, the head of their local law enforcement, and a school administrator. So I sent the survey to six different individuals within a county that are supposed to be seeing NIMS implemented within their organization. And it was a very small sample, and it was intended to be exploratory. But basically what I wanted to find out is, were county emergency managers accurate in the way they were assessing their county's implementation? Did they have, did these county emergency managers really have a good feel for how their counties felt and the degree to which they wanted to implement the system? Were they accurate in their assessments of how NIMS was actually being implemented? Well, now please note, this was an exploratory small sample study, so the findings are not generalizable, but the initial finding was that county emergency managers consistently overestimated their county's implementation intent and actual implementation. So going back, and I'm sorry, I'm going to flick back through here. Going back to what this this graph looks like, that would mean that we would actually see more counties in this area. And so the curve would actually move to the left, with most counties in this minimal to with modification area if the findings of this initial study were accurate. So that means that, as I said, the initial findings suggest that local county emergency managers, I apologize for going backwards, were actually overestimating the implementation of their counties. Now, in case you're curious, I'll just add on that public health and fire departments had the highest perceptions of NIMS and ICS. They wanted to implement it the most. They reported actually implementing it to the largest extent in line with what NIMS is intended to do. Elected officials and school administrators were actually in the middle. And the groups that were at the bottom were law enforcement and public works. They seem to have the lowest perceptions of NIMS and and didn't want to implement the system as much and reported not implementing the system in behaviors that align with the system's intent. So that summarizes where I'm at with my current research. I very much look forward to hearing your thoughts on the implications of these findings for our country. And I'm also willing to take any questions you might have. So with that, I'll turn it back to Amy. And
thank you very much
for the opportunity.
I think the findings are just fascinating. We will get started with our Q&A. And in order to submit your question or comment, and as Jessica mentioned, we definitely want to hear your experiences, how do they relate to our findings. And but anyway, you just click on Q&A at the top menu, and then you will type in the top half of the box that opens up, then click on Ask. Now, there is a hand-raising feature there, but we do not use that. When you click on Ask, your comment or question does not go directly to that bottom portion of the screen. Instead, it does go to an administration panel, which I will moderate. I will announce who the question is from, and read it aloud, and then, of course, our guests will respond via the conference bridge. And I will type in a little text, okay, which will release the text of the question to the Q&A panel. Now, note, you will only be able to submit one question or comment at a time. Please do try to keep it on the topics of NIMS implementation and reasonably concise. We are ready to begin now, and I see we already have about three questions waiting. Okay, our first question from Jordan Nelm asks, does your research investigate the intersection of ICS, that's the Incident Command System, and the Emergency Support Function, ESF, framework within EOCs?
Okay. My research hasn't looked at specifically the intersection of ICS with the emergency support functions and EOCs, but I can report that a study was conducted on that very topic by Mike Lindell, and its findings are available to review. I believe it was its findings were published in I do believe it was Disasters, but I can actually get that information to Amy if that's all right.
And we can include it in the transcript afterwards.
Yeah, and then you could look into that study. I have observed in my work on scene and the response to the tornado that there were significant issues between the Incident Command Post and the EOC, in part because of the different organizational structures that were employed within each of these organizing units. So they had a lot of difficulty communicating with one another, and they had challenges with using ICS versus using an EOC that was based on the emergency support function. So I did observe that within that one study, even though I wasn't specifically studying that issue. As an aside, or in addition, in my conversations with emergency managers across the country, I have heard that this is still a significant issue. However, I've also heard that there is not a strong interest in organizing EOCs in the ICS manner. Really, I've seen more of an interest and more practice using the emergency support function structure in EOCs. Now, what that means for the future, it means that we've got some work to do in that area so that these two units can talk to one another.
Thank you. I have a question, good question from John Bowman, who asks, how confident are you that the county's baseline understanding of NIMS was the same? How do you test that? In other words, you know, the NIMS as designed, as you were referring mm-hmm. to, how well did they understand, or how did you standardize for that?
Yeah. Well, I can say from the beginning that tackling the issue of how to measure NIMS and NIMS implementation and perceptions of the system is just an enormous task. So there were many discussions about how to go about doing this, and unfortunately there were very few examples in prior work done on these topics, even within policy implementation literature, of how to get at this issue. This topic that I was looking at in terms of behavior was often spoken about as being critical and important to look at and highly influential on whether or not policy has achieved its purpose, but very few people had done it, done that kind of work, in part because it's so darn hard. So what was discussed in terms of how to go about measuring this issue is that in terms of behavior, counties, anybody who has taken NIMS training gets a sense that there is a design purpose, that there is a design and a series of steps within each of these components, the five components, that they are supposed to be implementing. And the county emergency managers are required to report their progress and their compliance with implementing NIMS as designed through NIMSCAST. So it was assumed that there is every single person, every single county emergency manager has a sense of what NIMS is supposed to be. And they should also have a sense then if they're doing it the way that the NIMS document, the NIMS training, and NIMSCAST tells them they need to be, which is its design, or they're not doing it in that way. And so there is no assurance that they have a shared understanding of what NIMS is and its purpose and its goals, or whether or not their personal views aligned with that, but there is an assumption that they have taken the required mandated training, which certainly makes clear what the intent and design of NIMS is.
Thank you. Well, we've got a number of questions waiting. We have Richard Van Dame, who asks, about 40% of NIMS is the incident command system. Did the findings break out ICS implementation separately from the other NIMS concepts?
In this particular study that I spent the most time speaking about today, ICS, a subcomponent of one component of NIMS, just it's one of three components in that command and management component. So it's just a little part overall of NIMS. I did not break it out and look at ICS specifically, but I absolutely recognize that across this country, particularly outside of emergency management and outside of the fire service, there is a tendency to confuse the incident command system with NIMS. And so while this study didn't address that issue, I did do that in the Volunteer Fire Department perceptions of ICS and NIMS. I asked a series of questions of these volunteer fire department chiefs and volunteer firefighters about ICS and I asked them a series of questions about NIMS, and I was able to statistically test to find out that they do perceive these two systems separately, that there is the ability to distinguish one from the other. Now, of course, that probably fits with most expectations since ICS originated out of the fire service, but it still gets at this issue. Is there the ability of folks to tell the difference between the two and separate one from another? And at least now the suggestion would be yes, although I have yet to duplicate it on a national level.
We've got a very similar kind of comment, a rhetorical question from Boise State University, who says, could one of the problems be that the training focus has been predominantly on ICF and not NIMS as a whole? Our local training has been taught by local responders who don't recognize or realize the importance of the roles of the EOC, policy group, and external agencies outside of fire, law enforcement, and emergency medical services. The result is that our local responders are standardized at the ICS level, but other components of NIMS don't understand their roles as clearly.
I absolutely concur, and I think that gets at one of those variables that was found in this study to predict behavior and intent, and that is the policy characteristics. Was there adequate training? Is there adequate guidance and technical assistance? And the answer was resoundingly no. And anecdotally, based on my personal experience observing these classes in various locations, I can also tell you that I have personally observed that there is a tendency to focus overly on the incident command system when, in fact, it is a small component of NIMS relative to the overall design of the policy. And so I agree. I think that training needs to, if we want to stick with NIMS and if we believe that it is our ideal, then that is definitely an issue we have to look at going forward, and that is to address the whole of NIMS instead of just focusing on one of the subcomponents of one component of the policy.
I'm going to throw out a question, and feel free to comment on it, Jessica, but perhaps the audience can also chime in. This has been around for a while. I would have expected that, the original NIMS would go through a periodic evaluation and, updating as needed. And as far as I know, that process has not been occurring. What can you tell me about it?
Would you like me to chime in or wait?
Yeah, chime in, yeah.
Well, NIMS was redrafted and released in 2008 with a number of stakeholders around the country at all levels being given the opportunity to comment. So there was a revision of NIMS that did present the system differently on a number of fronts, both substantively, so some of what was required changed, but also in terms of kind of its tone or its tenor, which made it more clear that implementation of the system is a collaborative exercise with various levels of government and various departments playing a role and having choices along the way. So both in terms of substance and tone, it changed. As for going through more evaluation, the NIMS cast gives the federal government and states the ability to evaluate the extent to which their various jurisdictions are making progress. However, from a research perspective, I can certainly tell you that that data isn't readily available to look at, and the findings of any analysis that's being done aren't shared, at least not with me and my peers in academia. One explanation for that is that the states own the NIMSCAS data they collect from their counties, so the federal government doesn't actually own, quote-unquote, the county data. They just get a summary report, a report from the states, and the states own the other data. So I don't, Amy, I certainly anticipate that evaluations are being done based on the NIMSCAS data. However, I am not sure to what degree, if at all, those findings are being shared.
Great, thanks. Question from Cynthia and Chono, and also a comment, and I apologize if I butcher anybody's name. She said she was apologizes for being late in joining, but she wanted some clarification on what agencies were evaluated. I think you mentioned, you know, county emergency managers were who participated in the survey. But she says, I'm surprised that public works agencies were on the low end of implementing ICS/NIMS. The American Public Works Association is very active in supporting NIMS and ICS training. APWA, that's the Public Works Association accreditation program, requires having an emergency management program and implementation of NIMS ICS. And you know, is there any light you can shed on that limited information you got from the public works folks?
Yeah, Cynthia, I would say that reiterate my caveat in presenting those findings, and that is that this is a very small study, and the findings are not generalizable. So I absolutely, in no way, shape, or form, was trying to speak for public works directors at the county level across the United States, only a small subset of them. And my work in terms of evaluating the data I collected was to see the degree to which it aligned with the county's information and then to separate these various entities from one another. And so public works in this small study was at the bottom. And then I would say, as to whether or not I would anticipate finding on a national scale the same pattern with public works directors, I don't know. You know, I just wouldn't hazard a guess. I realize that there's a lot of support through the national level with public works to implement the system. There is, too, across the United States and all kinds of through all kinds of organizations, whether you're talking about the volunteer firefighter, the national level council, or you're talking about the National Fire Protection Association, and yet we're still seeing these patterns of variation. So specifically with public works, I don't know, but I am confident that what we're seeing is variation, irrespective of national level professional organizations work or FEMA's work, we're still seeing that variation.
Yeah, and that might go back to, you know, the particular implementer's views that at that time. Okay, we're running out of time. I think we can squeeze some of these in. Frank Rijek asks, have you reviewed NIMS compliance with hospitals as they interact with public health, local EMS, and law enforcement?
Yep. Here's the difference with hospitals, and this is a key one to know. Hospitals are required for accreditation to be compliant. They will not be an accredited hospital if they do not implement the system. They are regularly evaluated in person, and inspectors come to hospitals to check in person what's being done and what isn't being done. And based on their reports, hospitals do or don't receive accreditation. I mean, talk about a powerful incentive and a powerful sanction to motivate compliance with NIMS. From the very limited work that's been done on hospitals and their compliance with this NIMS issue, it's been only focused on ICS. And what has been found is that hospitals are complying at a far higher rate than I've seen in my data with implementation of the system. Again, I would expect to find that, because there's someone actually there checking it, forcing it, and it very much matters to those hospitals and their existence whether or not they're being compliant.
Yep, and we've done a number of programs on that topic in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Look in our archives. Robert Hare has kind of a lengthy comment here. I'm just going to read the first part of it and release the text, and then everyone can see it for themselves. But he says, I believe that the issue of implementation in a strictly standardized manner versus desire to implement in a modified manner needs to be further studied in detail and is a key question. And I'll release that. And I guess basically what he's asking is, you know, how wide are these modifications? And you indicated that you did not get at that, and that is something that does need further research. Is that correct?
Well, yes. Not only did I not get at it and it needs further research, but looking at the complexity of what NIMS is, at least on its face, what it tries to do, I don't think that there has ever been a more sweeping, grand, ambitious policy mandate, certainly in the history of emergency management, and I would dare say in many respects outside of emergency management. I mean, this policy tries to be everything and structure how we do emergency management through its components. And to study the degree to which these activities are actually being undertaken, these processes and even the use of terminology, on-the-ground research is required. I mean, you literally have to be there to see it and to stand back objectively and watch whether or not it's being done. But in order to get to some sort of economy of scale, in order to report across the United States, I mean, I would argue that it's just not feasible to do that kind of work, and yet that is the critical, critical work that needs to be done. So it's kind of caught in this catch-22 of do we just keep having small case studies like the one I did in the tornado where we're on the ground doing it and we never know the degree to which we can generalize, or do we try and gather data in other ways that gets at these issues while not perfectly, but at least allows us to assess where we're at. And so, you know, I just totally agree with your comment. We just need a lot more work on this topic, and I hope others take up the challenge, and I look forward to reading their findings.
Two more, and I think we can squeeze them in quickly. One from Keith Holman. He says, is it possible that the implementation of NIMS is impacted by the perception that NIMS is fire and not all hazards?
I would suggest that that is not the case based on my findings. The findings looked at issues related to whether or not there was a need for NIMS or a perceived need for NIMS, whether or not counties agreed with the goals of NIMS, and other such questions that didn't ask them, do you think NIMS is a fire policy, but certainly asked them whether or not they thought it was relevant to their county. And I can report that counties believe NIMS is a good idea. So the whole policy design issue, is NIMS a good idea? Is NIMS needed? The answer across the United States is yes. So it's not a disagreement with the concept of NIMS, where I found issues with implementation. It actually gets to those other aspects of the policy that I've already addressed. So, I mean, I didn't ask that question specifically, you know, was it considered a fire policy? But I did ask, do you think there's a need for it? Do you believe it's a good idea? Do you think the policy is needed? And in all cases, the majority said yes.
Okay. Richard has one more question, Richard Van Dame. He says, how did you determine the impact of nonconformance with NIMS on the success of the response effort? And if I understood your study correctly, you didn't do that.
Nope. I didn't.
Yeah, but your tentative conclusion is if standardization is a good thing, and we're not very well standardized, right?
Yep. Basically, what I did not look at actual response efforts. I asked county emergency managers to assess their counties, as Amy alluded to. What I would anticipate, however, is that we know, at least from the findings of this study, that counties are implementing NIMS in different ways across this country. They're modifying it. And I saw differences within counties. I saw differences within states in terms of the data that I received. So there's a lot of variation out there, and what's going on with NIMS implementation is really complex. Would that matter in a day-to-day event? even a Joplin event, I would suggest no. I don't think you're going to see the impacts of not implementing NIMS in a standardized way in those jurisdictions. We saw a great coordinated and collaborative effort in the response to Joplin. Whether or not they were utilizing each of the various components of NIMS or ICS, and this is starting on a new topic that I've been looking into, but doesn't seem to be relevant because it was a small geographic area, there was a limited number of responders. We won't really know the answer of that question that you're posing until we have another event the size of 9/11 or the size of Hurricane Katrina or looking back into the past at a Hurricane Andrew or a Hurricane Camille. I mean, when we have events like that that cross multiple jurisdictional boundaries, multiple states, involve every level of government, that's when we really have to see standardization. That's when it's very clearly to our benefit and where it has to exist for things to run as smoothly as they could. And I would suggest that based on this data, it would be unlikely, were a Hurricane Katrina to occur tomorrow, that we would see the response efforts unfold as efficiently and effectively as we would like, particularly given the investments we've made in NIMS.
And on that note, I think that's a very good note to wrap up on. So thank you very much, Jessica. We do appreciate your taking the time to be with us today and share this information. And we wish you success with your future research and hope you'll keep in touch. And, you know, we look forward to learning more as time goes on.
Thank you very much.
Again, the video and audio recording should be available later this afternoon. And if you need to get on our mailing list, go to our homepage and subscribe. I've got this the rating review form up. Please, you know, if you have additional comments on NIMS, you can use this and or the research or just NIMS and ICS in general. You're welcome to use the comment form. And we do actually post those on our background page. Our next program will take place on Wednesday, September 28th. Please watch your announcement and plan to be with us then. Until next time, thanks for everyone participating today, and I want to especially thank you for excellent questions and the degree of participation. And have a great afternoon. Look forward to seeing you next time. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.